download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watt.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And as we move forward, we thank you very much for joining us. And we have a very special guest joining us right now. This is her first time, and hopefully it's the first of many. We have Attorney General Maura Healey, who is joining us. Attorney General, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Oh, Kevin, it's great to be on with you.
First and foremost, here we are. You're hitting right about your sixth-month mark. What's it been like the first 6 months in office for you?
Well, you know, it's been great. It's been busy, and I ran on a promise that I was going to be the people's lawyer and run a law firm that was here to fight for people and help people out across a range of areas, from consumer fraud to public safety to utility rates and civil rights. And certainly we spent a lot of time working on the heroin and opioid epidemic. But there's great energy in the office. People are rolling up their sleeves and really excited to get after it and go to work each day to try to make a difference, a positive difference in people's lives here in the state. So I'm having a great experience, a great time with it. But also realize that there is a tremendous amount of work ahead for all of us. So we look forward to doing that.
I guess I would ask you, just to kind of dial back the clock, folks, whether they may or may not know, through your campaign last fall for office, you spent, upwards to 7 years in the Attorney General's office. How did the time in the office help you get, prepared for your duties now?
Well, I think it made me very prepared to begin on January 22nd, the day after I got sworn in. I was in private practice for many years. I had a short stint as a prosecutor and then a business litigator, and then made the jump to the Attorney General's office, where I served for 7 years across different divisions and bureaus. And that really gave me a great understanding of the office, of the different laws that we can enforce to use to help people, and how we can get things done. There are a lot of tools in the toolbox in that office. Not everything we do is about investigations or lawsuits or law enforcement. There's also an aspect of it that's about public education and outreach and bringing stakeholders together, and it's really an exciting office. I quit that job that I loved in the Attorney General's office a few years ago to run for the one job I wanted, which was to be the Attorney General, because I just think it's an office of tremendous power and possibility. And I think having been in the office, it makes me really sort of all the more ready to hit the ground running to get after it for folks here in the state. And I also know a lot of people in the office. I've worked with many of them, and that helps as well, particularly as you get going with a new administration.
I guess the first thing I would ask you, and that is, you kind of brought it up when you were mentioning it, and that is this epidemic that we have with opioids. I mean, there was a story regarding a doctor in the Hyannis area who was, writing prescriptions, and probably one of several people that we see across the country who are doing this. Talk to me about your fight against opioid addiction.
Well, it really started on the campaign trail. It didn't matter where I went, whether I was in Brockton, whether I was in Pittsfield, whether I was in Bedford. Everywhere I went, people would come up and talk to me about their brother, their sister, their parent, their child, who was dealing with this addiction. And I really came to see that this was something that was hitting every community in the state. Didn't matter your race or your ethnicity, did not matter how much money you made, it was affecting everyone. And I also came to learn in time that 4 out of 5 of our heroin users today in Massachusetts started with prescription drugs. We're less than 5% of the world's population, but we consume 80% of the opiate supply. A lot of these people started with pills. And they started with pills and then in time moved to heroin, because heroin is cheaper, in some places, $3, $4, $5 a bag. And what we've seen has been devastating. You know, in Bristol County, there were 117 deaths last year alone. in Plymouth, there were 85 deaths. And that doesn't begin to account for the number of ODs that don't result in deaths, but that are happening every day. It's absolutely devastating. It's heartbreaking. And I've made it a top priority. One of the things we did recently was to go after illegal prescribing practices. We've gone after a doctor down the Cape who was prescribing pills to people for whom it wasn't medically necessary. Some of these people who were provided powerful painkillers had documented substance abuse problems. And what we, you know, understand in these situations is that a lot of times people get these pills and then they're reselling them. They're selling them out on the black market, fueling this disease. We've also worked hard to advocate for more access to treatment and beds. So many people are actually seeking help, but we don't have the treatment and the programs necessary. And so that needs work. I'm also pressing to make Narcan more affordable. I recently met with fire chiefs, first responders, really been on the front lines, but they've had too much difficulty getting Narcan at a reasonable price. And so we are working now with members of the legislature to try to get that done. We're also focusing on prevention and education, supporting education initiatives, particularly for young people across the state, and working with the medical community on safe prescribing and safe dispensing practices. We're also trying to get the word out, Kevin, about the Good Samaritan Law. This is a law that people need to know about. It's meant to encourage people to call 911 when they witness an overdose and to let folks know that they're not going to be prosecuted if they make that call. And I think that's something that's important for people to know. So in addition to investigating and prosecuting high-end and high-level drug trafficking, which we've done, we really are trying to come at it from a number of perspectives because this is a disease, this is a public health crisis, and we need to work and support the families who have suffered for far too long, oftentimes with stigma about this. They need to be able to come forward and get access to the treatment and recovery services that they need.
Again, we are speaking with Attorney General Maura Healey, and we are talking a little bit about her office and her work in regards to the opioid addiction and the epidemic that we're seeing. I also believe that under your leadership, you are looking to improve access to treatment. Am I correct?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a disease, and people need help. Right now, it's heartbreaking. If you go into our district court, you will see people who are trying to voluntarily commit themselves or have their children committed just so that they can access treatment and recovery services. It should not be that you have to go to jail to get treatment. You know, we've had jail on demand for a long time in this country. We need treatment on demand, and that really is the focus. And, you know, I know that that's a focus that is shared by many in law enforcement, sheriffs, district attorneys, police, as well as our court system, who are just seeing the numbers grow and grow. We've also reached out to insurance companies. We want to make sure that people aren't facing unnecessary barriers in accessing coverage for care and treatment. And we're taking a look at legislation that's out there that's aimed at improving access to more treatment and care. I'll say this, too. On the issue of beds, I firmly believe that there are beds in existing buildings in our state that we could convert and use right now or in short order to provide treatment. And I think one thing that's important is that we do a better job of thinking of treatment across a continuum. You know, it's not the case that you simply are going to detox someone and a week or two later you're going to be out and fine. Heroin addiction, opioid addiction, it's a really long and prolonged process in terms of recovery. And people do relapse, Kevin. So we need a treatment system that really accounts for that. It needs to be longer term, and it needs to have different levels of involvement, counseling, follow-up. I like the idea of recovery coaches for people, making sure that people, you know, get access to those services, including medically assisted services as necessary. So it's a whole continuum, and treatment, treatment, treatment. It is so, so important. in addition to making sure that people, particularly young people, don't get started in the first place.
I guess I would ask you, kind of staying along the treatment, have you found any issues when it comes to treatment centers or insurance companies when it comes to having beds or being able to get services for treatment?
Well, you know, recently our office took action against a center up in North Andover that was providing Suboxone to patients. Now, Suboxone, we know, is something that many heroin users and addicts have used as a means of breaking the addiction. Here's the problem we encountered. We realized that they were actually charging patients cash instead of allowing them to use their insurance, and they were telling them that they didn't have to go to counseling. So that's really unfair because we don't need these kinds of clinics or centers profiting off of patients unlawfully, patients who are seeking treatment for opiate addiction. And we're looking at similar allegations at other Suboxone treatment locations because we want to make sure that people are getting the right treatment at the right time from the right hands and that we're doing everything we can to ensure access to care for opioid dependency. And, you know, this is a space where there are a lot of players in the market, and we want them to be doing right by the law and doing right by patients.
I guess I would ask you is, and this will be probably the final thing that I ask you in regards to this issue, how important is it that your office works closely with other offices or works closely with the governor and the working group that he formed once he came in office?
Oh, it's incredibly important. It's critical. And, you know, I'm really pleased to be participating in Governor Baker's working group along with Secretary Mary Lou Sutter's. Our office and his administration have worked very closely on these issues and will continue to. It's really important that we have all hands on deck, and that's why you see, you know, the effort to really work together on what is such a critical, critical issue. It's why we need police, fire, sheriff, schools, healthcare providers, the medical community, insurance companies. We really need anyone and everyone at the table right now because there is such sadness happening in homes and communities as we speak across the state tonight, and it is incumbent upon us to do absolutely everything we can.
Okay, we're speaking with Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey. I want to talk a little bit about something that you are working on. I know that there are public hearings and listening sessions that are about to wrap up in regards to paid sick leave. Talk to me about your work in that area.
So last November, the voters in Massachusetts passed a law that now allows workers to accrue earned paid sick time. After 90 days, if you work for a company with or a business with 11 or more employees, you will over time be able to accrue sick time. And this is going to give an estimated 1 million people in Massachusetts a new protection. What it's going to do is it's going to allow somebody who needs to take a day to stay home to care for a sick child or take them to a doctor's appointment or stay home to care for an elderly parent or to take care of themselves when sick. It's going to give them an opportunity to build up some time to take. Now, a lot of employers already have this protection and allow people paid leave time, but we know that there are many that don't. And so this is a law that was passed last fall, and our office is in charge of developing the regulations to implement it. So what we've tried to do is get around the state as many places as possible. We've had a dozen public hearings and listening sessions, including one recently in Brockton. And we're hearing from employers and small businesses and workers' rights groups to try to craft some regulations that work. And the good news is we're getting there, so that I think that, you know, come July 1st, we'll be in very good shape. We've also given some more time to businesses that are already sort of doing right by their employees to get the necessary HR and payroll work in place by the end of the year. So we're happy to be engaged and involved in this effort. I think You know, particularly as you look at some of our gateway cities, as you look at Brockton, for example, there are any number of lower wage workers who've really been vulnerable over the years who now will have this protection. I think it's important to them. I think it's important to their families. And it's really the right thing to do.
Anything that you've heard in any of these listening sessions or public hearings that has made you kind of deeper in the conversation or adding certain things to draft that you're putting together?
Well, sure. You know, I heard testimony from a personal care attendant who has had to make a decision about whether or not she goes to work to care for an elderly sick person while she herself is sick or while her own child at home is sick, or decides to stay home with her sick child and lose a paycheck. And for far too long, people have had to make that choice. I heard from a young man last week at a hearing that, you know, he goes to work as in the restaurant with 101-degree fever, and that's not healthy for customers, it's not healthy for his coworkers, it's not healthy for him. There are people who have worked, as they say, in many low-wage positions who now, you know, who really do need this benefit. So I continue to hear stories from people who need this benefit. I also heard a lot from some businesses about sort of, you know, looking for answers, looking for clarity about the law. At the end of the day, this isn't actually going to change much for a lot of businesses, but for those businesses who are going to have to look to provide this protection for the first time, my message to them has been, your Attorney General's office is here to work with you, to listen to you, and to help you get to where you need to be. So we'll continue to be out and about educating both workers and businesses about this. But the good news is, I've heard certainly from many in the business community, including most recently the Associated Industries in Massachusetts, that you know, they're pleased with how our office has handled the process, and you know, look forward to seeing through the implementation.
Now, I want to touch upon your sports, Ida. From what I understand, you are somebody who's not only a sports fan, but you're also an athlete. We'll first start out on, we know this ruckus that's still ongoing regarding Deflategate and all the attention that's been paid to it. So you actually were in the news for a brief moment in regards to all of this that was coming out from the NFL. What was that in regards to with this whole Deflategate thing?
Well, I do have a sports background. I went to Winnicott High School up in Hampton, New Hampshire, and I myself was a soccer and basketball and tennis player, but ended up playing basketball in college and then overseas professionally for a little bit, as long as I could get away with it. You know, maybe for that reason I got asked this question. I was asked by a reporter in the wake of the announcement that the NFL was going to suspend Tom Brady for 4 games, what I thought about it. And my comment was that I wish the NFL had spent an ounce of the amount of time that it spent on Deflategate on the very real issues of domestic violence and sexual assault that are all too pervasive in that league. And, you know, as somebody who has done domestic violence work, who believes strongly in taking steps to eradicate and end domestic violence and sexual assault, who has seen what's happened in high schools and colleges and our professional leagues about a culture that's just all too accepting of domestic violence and sexual assault and dating violence, the NFL has its priorities out of whack, was basically my comment. When you see an individual, you know, Ray Rice, where he physically assaulted his girlfriend in a pretty horrifying way. We all remember the images from the elevator. He gets a 2-game suspension as a matter of instinct out of the gate, the NFL. Tom Brady, over this issue of air pressure, is facing a 4-game suspension. My comment was simply the NFL has its priorities out of place, and it is a league that, you know, for far too long has not taken women and girls seriously.
Bravo. Bravo. And I think you're absolutely right. The focus should be a little bit more. So it should be probably the other way around.
This is a multi-billion dollar industry
with
a tremendous platform, right?
Yep.
Men, women, young people,
yep.
They're watching. They're tuning in. I'm a huge Patriots fan, and I tune in. But with that platform, I would just like to see them use that platform so that the message that they're sending by their actions isn't one of, doesn't really matter what happens to women. Instead, they can use that platform to actually, you know, announce that there's actually zero tolerance for this kind of behavior, and we need to change the culture. As somebody who grew up playing sports in school and in high school, I talk to young people all the time about this stuff. And where do you think young people and high school student athletes take their cues from?
People who are, you know, they look as to their prototypical heroes. I mean, you're absolutely right. They look at all these athletes, these sports stars, as, you know, and look to emulate them, as they do anybody who is an adult, depending on what field they're in. So
Right. I think that, you know, I'm not looking the professional athletes, you know, they're professional athletes. They're not the be-all and end-all, as much as I love sports. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish that young people sometimes looked with as much admiration and wonder at, you know, our teachers and our firefighters and our, you know, engineers and our police officers and, you know, nurses and others, right? But sports have a place in our culture, and I wish that, you know, and would hope that professional sports leagues, you know, recognize that.
Okay. I'm going to let you put your Nostradamus hat on, seeing that as you are humble and not, you know, not letting folks know that you were a starting point guard for a professional basketball team in Austria, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm sure you have quite the love for the NBA, and we know that we've got quite the matchup. Even though our beloved Boston Celtics aren't in the championship series, you have the King LeBron James and his Cleveland Cavaliers and the whole story of coming home on one side, and then you have Steph Curry, the reigning MVP for this season, and his Golden State Warriors. I'm sure you've been watching, and I'm sure that you would like to give a small prediction, a friendly prediction, before we let you go.
Well, you know, first off, I got to say I'm a huge Celtics fan, and I love Isaiah Thomas. Maybe it's because, you know, I was a 5'4" point guard, so I appreciate the little people in the game. And I'm really excited. They play really hard, and just so great to see to have Brad Stevens. And, you know,
good
I'm
coach.
Looking forward to next year. But as for this year, here's my bias. I thought LeBron made the move for money and glory, and I've never quite gotten over that. So I'll tell you who I'm rooting for. It's Golden State. I got to give it up to Curry, and maybe it's my bias towards point guard, but that's who I'll be rooting for in this. You know, at the end of the day, having been an underdog myself in times, I tend to always root for the underdog.
Does this go seven? Does this go six? Who wins?
I think Golden State's good. I'll say Golden State in six. How's that?
I like that. Well, I mean, they got home court advantage.
Yep.
And if you've kind of followed the series, the regular season series, they split, but they each won on their home court. So that home court advantage might loom large.
Well, I hope so. And you know, Golden State has the advantage in that respect. But I think anytime you're going up against LeBron, and that caliber of team, you know, it's a tall order. But I'm excited to tune in, and I hope it's not. You know, I don't often root for teams on the West Coast, but in this instance, I will.
Okay, I want to thank you, Attorney General, for joining us. If folks if there's any particular issues that not only that we had talked about, but they feel that the Attorney General might be able to help them with, how can they find out more information if it does apply to them?
Well, I think a great resource for those who have access to the Internet, our website, if you go to www.mass.gov/AGO or just Google Attorney General's Office, there's a lot of information about how to protect yourself as a consumer, how to protect yourself against identity theft, or how to protect yourself against, you know, getting a bad loan, what to do if you've got student loan debt, for example. We've got really robust programs right now about fighting foreclosures and dealing with some of the housing issues. And I know that we have worked and will continue to work in Brockton and the greater area on those issues. But go to our website. If anybody has a consumer complaint or issue they want to raise with us, you can file that complaint at our office by picking up the phone and dialing 617-727-2200 or by going online, and you can always file a complaint electronically. Also, we have locations in Boston, Springfield, Worcester, and New Bedford. But I'm real excited, Kevin, because we've just launched a division of community engagement where we are going to have people from our office on the ground, out and about in communities like Brockton on a more regular basis so we can better hear from folks. That's going to help us better serve the public, I think, in the time ahead. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, and we'll definitely look forward to our next conversation down the road somewhere. And hopefully you enjoy the summer.
Well, thanks. I look forward to that, and thanks so much for the time.
You got it. She is Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD-FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.